Welcome to the Deep Dive, your shortcut to understanding the complexities of the legal world. For those of you law students grappling with land use, constitutional law, and the sometimes head-scratching realm of equitable remedies, you've landed in the right place.
Hope so.
Today, we're plunging straight into a fascinating Alaska Supreme Court case. Laverty v. Alaska Railroad Corp.
Yeah.
Think of it as a real-world example of when constitutional principles bump up against practical considerations of fairness and how a court navigates that.
Exactly. Laverty is a case that, you know, really sticks with you because it highlights this fundamental tension. On one hand, you've got the need for government transparency and sticking to constitutional mandates, specifically the public notice clause here.
Right.
And on the other hand, there's this equitable doctrine of latches, which essentially asks, did you wait too long to complain to the point where it's now unfair to the other party? Hmm. The Alaska Supreme Court's decision offers some really valuable insights into how these competing ideas get balanced.
Okay, so let's get into the nitty-gritty. What's the core of the dispute in Laverty? Paint us a picture of what went down.
At its heart, the case involves a contract. The Alaska Railroad Corporation, or ARRC, which, while having some independence, is still pretty closely tied to the state, they entered into an agreement with Flamingo Brothers Partnership.
Okay.
This contract allowed Flamingo Brothers to extract gravel from ARRC-owned land. Now, a resident named Paul Laverty took issue with this. His argument was that this gravel extraction contract amounted to a disposal of a state land interest, and therefore the public notice clause of the Alaska Constitution required ARRC to provide public notice before granting the contract.
Before, yeah.
He went to court seeking two main things: an injunction to halt the gravel extraction, and a declaratory judgment, essentially a court declaration that ARRC had indeed violated the Constitution. Imagine a scenario where a state entity, entrusted with public land, quietly grants a significant right to a private company without any public say. That's kind of the crux of it.
Right. And ARRC is a state-affiliated entity.
Yeah.
So what was their justification for not providing public notice beforehand? What was their side of the story?
Well, ARRC and Flamingo Brothers essentially argued two main points. First, they contended that even if the land in question was considered state land for constitutional purposes, the subsequent land use permitting process that Flamingo Brothers had to go through served as a sufficient form of public notice.
After the fact.
Yeah. Their reasoning was that this permitting process allowed for public input, albeit after the contract was already in place. Second, they raised the equitable defense of latches, arguing that Laverty had waited an unreasonable amount of time, about 16 months after learning about the contract, to file his lawsuit.
16 months, wow.
And that this delay had significantly prejudiced Flamingo Brothers, who had already invested, you know, time and money into the project.
So we have this constitutional demand for upfront public notice, squaring off against the equitable principle that you can't just sit on your rights indefinitely, especially if it harms someone else. What did the trial court make of all this?
The Superior Court actually agreed with Laverty on a key preliminary point. They found that ARC's lands were indeed state lands for the purposes of the public notice clause. That was a significant win for Laverty, establishing that ARC couldn't just sidestep this constitutional requirement.
Okay, so that's step one.
Exactly. But despite this, the lower court ultimately denied Laverty both the injunction and the declaratory relief he was seeking. For the injunction, the court sided with ARRC and Flamingo Brothers, concluding that Laverty's 16-month delay was unreasonable and had caused demonstrable prejudice to Flamingo Brothers due to their investment. That's the core application of latches.
Right, the prejudice.
As for the declaratory relief, that court statement about the legality of ARC's actions, the lower court denied it because they were persuaded by the argument that the post-contract permitting process satisfied the public notice requirement.
Okay, so Laverty loses the first round. What was his argument when he took the case up to the Alaska Supreme Court? What did he hope to achieve on appeal?
Laverty appealed both aspects of the Superior Court's decision. He argued that the denial of both the injunction and the declaratory judgment was, well, legally incorrect. He strongly asserted that the public notice clause mandated public notice before ARRC entered into the gravel contract, and that a permitting process afterward just didn't cut it constitutionally.
Makes sense.
He also argued that he should be awarded his attorney's fees, contending that he was acting as a public interest litigant by challenging a potential violation of the state constitution, which benefits, you know, all Alaskans.
And what was the response from ARC and Flamingo Brothers? Did they just stick to their original arguments, or did they shift strategy?
They largely reiterated their arguments from the lower court, yeah. But they also took the offensive with a cross appeal. They argued that the Superior Court was wrong in the first place to even find that ARRC was subject to the public notice clause.
Ah, okay. Double down.
Kind of. They maintained that ARRC's unique status exempted it from this requirement. And furthermore, they argued that even if the public notice clause did apply, Laverty's delay should completely bar him from any relief, including even the declaratory judgment.
All right, so the Alaska Supreme Court had some pretty weighty issues to consider. What were the central legal questions they really had to wrestle with? So with the background set, what were the critical legal hurdles here?
There were several key legal questions, really. First, and fundamentally, did the public notice clause of the Alaska Constitution even apply to an entity like the Alaska Railroad Corporation? That was a big one.
Threshold question.
Exactly. Second, if it did apply, did the contract with Flamingo Brothers to extract gravel constitute a disposal of state land interests in a way that would trigger the mandatory public notice?
Okay.
Third, and crucially, did the land use permitting process that took place after the contract was signed satisfy the constitutional requirement for prior public notice?
That timing issue again.
Right. And finally, the court had to determine whether Laverty's delay was significant and prejudicial enough to invoke latches and prevent him from getting the remedies he sought.
Let's delve into the court's analysis then. How did the Alaska Supreme Court address that threshold question? Was ARRC even bound by the public notice clause?
On this initial but critical point, the Supreme Court sided firmly with Laverty. They carefully examined the relationship between ARRC and the state of Alaska, looking at factors like state ownership, the public purpose served by the railroad, and the degree of state control.
So not just a private company?
Not at all. The court stated unequivocally that ARC couldn't just use its corporate structure as a shield to evade fundamental constitutional responsibilities. In their view, ARC, given its nature and ties to the state, falls squarely within the definition of government for the purposes of the public notice clause. So yes, it must comply. That's a really crucial determination, actually.
That sounds like a pretty clear-cut ruling on that point. So what about the next hurdle? Did the gravel extraction contract actually constitute a disposal of a land interest that necessitated public notice?
Yeah.
What kind of legal interest did the court say was created?
Okay, this is where a nuanced understanding of property law becomes essential, and it's definitely a key takeaway for you law students. The Supreme Court concluded that the gravel extraction contract granted Flamingo Brothers what's legally known as a profit, a prendre.
A profit, prendre.
Think of it as a specific type of easement, a non-possessory right to use someone else's land for a particular purpose. In this case, the specific purpose was to enter ARC's land and take gravel.
Okay, like mining rights.
Exactly like mining rights. That's a great analogy. Now, what distinguishes a profit a prendre from, say, a more basic license, which is just temporary revocable permission, is its inherent durability and exclusivity. A profit represents a more substantial, longer-lasting interest in the property itself.
So it's more serious than just permission.
Much more serious. This distinction underscores a fundamental principle. The level of public scrutiny often correlates with how durable and exclusive the right being granted is. The court's focus here really highlights a cautious approach to letting private interests gain significant, lasting control over public resources without prior public input.
So that mining company analogy holds. Granting long-term rights to extract minerals would also be a profit a prendre, needing prior public notice.
Exactly. Perfect parallel. Because the contract with Flamingo Brothers provided this more enduring and exclusive right to extract gravel, a valuable resource from the land, the court reasoned it was a disposal of an interest in land significant enough to trigger the public notice clause. They specifically noted that a mere license, lacking that durability and exclusivity, might not rise to that level. Understanding these nuances is crucial for drafting or analyzing land use deals.
Okay, so ARC was subject to the clause, and the contract did create an interest that triggered it. Now, what about ARC and Flamingo Brothers' argument that the post-contract permitting process satisfied the requirement for prior public notice?
Yeah, the Supreme Court was not at all persuaded by that argument, not even a little bit. They placed really strong emphasis on the word prior in the public notice clause.
Makes sense.
Their reasoning was that the fundamental purpose of requiring public notice is to allow the public an opportunity to provide input and express their views before the state commits to disposing of a land interest. A permitting process that happens after ARC and Flamingo Brothers had already signed the deal and granted the right, that simply doesn't fulfill the constitutional objective.
Yeah, isn't the whole point of prior notice to allow public input before decisions are finalized and contracts signed? A post hoc process feels a bit like closing the barn door after the horse is bolted, right?
That's precisely the court's logic. It has to happen beforehand to mean anything. This was a central pillar of their reasoning when they ultimately ruled for Laverty on the declaratory judgment part.
Now, let's turn to the issue of lashes. The lower court relied on Laverty's delay to deny the injunction. What was the Supreme Court's take on that aspect?
Interestingly, the Supreme Court actually agreed with the lower court on the application of lashes. They affirmed the denial of the injunction based on this equitable doctrine.
Okay.
Just as a reminder, lashes isn't a strict legal deadline like a statute of limitations. It's more a principle of fairness. For lashes to apply, courts generally look for two key things. One, an unreasonable and unexcused delay in asserting a legal claim, and two, prejudice to the opposing party because of that delay.
Unreasonable delay plus prejudice. Got it.
In Laverty's case, the court found that his 16-month delay, especially given that Flamingo Brothers had already made significant investments in the project during that time, did indeed constitute an unreasonable delay that resulted in tangible prejudice. This aspect really highlights that tension between upholding legal principles and achieving practical fairness, a classic theme in equity.
So, even though the Supreme Court agreed that ARRC had violated the Constitution by not providing prior public notice, Laverty still couldn't get a court order to stop the gravel extraction because he waited too long, and Flamingo Brothers had already invested heavily. That seems like a pretty significant limitation on enforcing a constitutional right.
It absolutely highlights the power and the limitations of equitable defenses. Lashes acts as a check, even on fundamental rights, when a party's undue delay creates a situation where providing a remedy would be fundamentally unfair to the other side. Unlike a rigid statute of limitations, lashes is flexible, requiring a case-by-case look at reasonableness and prejudice. The court here clearly felt halting the extraction after that delay and investment would be inequitable.
But Laverty did achieve something in his appeal, right? The Supreme Court reversed the denial of the declaratory judgment. What's the practical significance of that? So a declaratory judgment is basically the court saying, yes, you're right about the law, even if they don't order immediate action. What's the value there?
Exactly. Even though his delay barred the immediate equitable remedy of an injunction, the Supreme Court did reverse the denial of the declaratory judgment. By doing so, the court formally declared that ARRC had violated the public notice clause by failing to provide notice before entering the contract.
Okay, so a formal ruling.
Yes. While the gravel extraction itself could continue because of lashes, this declaration serves as an official pronouncement that ARRC's actions were unconstitutional. This has several important implications. First, it establishes legal precedent. ARRC and similar entities must provide prior notice for similar deals in the future.
That's a standard.
Precisely. Second, even if it didn't stop this project, it could inform future decisions by ARRC and other state bodies. And finally, it provided the basis for the Supreme Court to remand the case for reconsideration of Laverty's attorney's fees.
And speaking of attorney's fees, the lower court had initially recognized Laverty as a public interest litigant. How did that factor into the Supreme Court's decision?
Well, because the Supreme Court ultimately ruled in Laverty's favor on that crucial declaratory judgment finding ARRC did violate the Constitution, they sent the case back to the Superior Court to reconsider attorney's fees.
Right.
Normally, in the U.S. system, each side pays their own lawyers, right?
Right, the American rule.
But there are exceptions, and a big one is for public interest litigants. These are folks who bring lawsuits that vindicate important public rights and benefit loss of people. Since Laverty successfully established a violation of the state constitution's public notice clause, which is all about government transparency and public involvement, the Supreme Court indicated he would likely be entitled to recover his reasonable fees. It encourages people to bring these important cases.
Okay, so to summarize the key takeaways from Laverty, injunction denied due to Laverty's unreasonable delay prejudiced Flamingo Brothers. But the denial of the declaratory judgment was reversed. The Supreme Court did find ARRC violated the public notice clause by not giving prior notice. And finally, the case went back to the lower court to reconsider awarding Laverty his attorney's fees as a public interest litigant, given his win on the constitutional issue.
That's a perfectly concise and accurate breakdown. This case really highlights several vital lessons for you aspiring lawyers. First, those seemingly subtle distinctions in property law, like profit a prendre versus a simple license, can have huge legal consequences, triggering different levels of scrutiny and constitutional protections. Durability and exclusivity matter. Second, Laverty powerfully demonstrates the real-world impact of equitable defenses like latches. Even with a constitutional violation, unreasonable delay causing prejudice can bar certain remedies, like an injunction. It's a critical reminder that strategic timing isn't just procedural fluff. It can fundamentally affect outcomes, especially in public interest cases.
It really makes you think about the balancing act courts perform, doesn't it? How much weight goes to strict constitutional adherence versus, you know, the potential financial harm to private companies acting on government decisions, even if those decisions turn out flawed?
That's the core tension.
In this case, the Alaska Supreme Court seems to have found a kind of middle ground, letting the project continue, but formally calling out the constitutional violation.
Exactly. It underscores that inherent tension when fundamental principles meet equitable considerations and economic realities. It forces us to think about how courts weigh these competing interests in land use and public resource management. What does this balancing act suggest about the judiciary's role in ensuring both constitutional compliance and practical fairness? It's definitely a case offering valuable food for thought for property and constitutional law studies.
Some really crucial insights there. Thanks for unpacking the intricacies of Laverty v. Alaska Railroad Corps for us.
My pleasure. It's a complex but important one.
Until our next deep dive, keep exploring those complex legal landscapes.